On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Sheen, Mr. Curtis Franklin back on the show today. Ubiquiti's recent data breaches reads like a bad hacker script, but it brings some interesting trends and some light to some of the trends that are happening in cybercrime. We're going to discuss some of those. Plus, we also have a great guest, someone who might actually bring the mojo back into infrastructure and operations tooling. We have Mike Wagner. He's co-founder and CEO of Medify on the show. And we're going to chat about some use cases like MLB, Major League Baseball, actually using Kubernetes-powered analytics. Some cool stuff there. So you definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 543, recorded May 12th, 2023. Bare Metal Mojo. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Thinks Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. And by ACI Learning. CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is critical. With an average completion rate of over 80%, your team deserves the entertaining and cutting-edge training they want. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big world of the enterprise, but I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals and the experts. We have to bring in our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's principal analyst at Omdia and someone who spends a lot of time in the enterprise solving problems. Curtis, welcome back to the show. What's keeping you busy this week?
Well, it has been a busy week. We're getting some reports ready. The aftermath of RSA got some things going on around risk quantification. In other words, it's easy to say my situation is risky, but exactly how risky is it? And how would you know if you made it better or worse? Well, that's where risk quantification comes in, and that's one of the things I'm researching. Also beginning to look really hard at the way AI is being used in security. Now, we know how it's being used in search and in art and in other things, but as part of security, it's being used in some interesting ways. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be looking at over the next few months. Beyond all that, it's hard to believe, but it's getting time to get ready for Black Hat. So putting together the beginnings of some presentations I'm going to be making out there. We've got the Omdia Analyst Summit early in the week, so have to be ready to stand up on stage and sound all intelligent for the folks who come to see us.
Amazing how time flies. Black Hat's coming up already. When's Black Hat at?
Black Hat is the second week in August.
Okay.
So
a little bit of ways, but not too far away.
Not too far. It'll be here before you know it.
Well, speaking of busy, we also have our very own Mr. Brian Chi. He's our favorite network geek. Plus, he's also trying to wire up the world with affordable fiber. How's that going, Chibert?
Oh, the fiber's going great. Inexpensive Chinese fusion splicer works just dandy. But this last week, I was actually spending some time with my business partner with Sky Fiber. And we were at the Wincom conference over at the JW Marriott here in Orlando. And I got to talk to a bunch of different wireless vendors, including Tarana, which our famous Mo works for. But what's really cool is I also got to talk to the folks at Bicell and BEC about private LTE and possibly using that at the fairgrounds so that even if the cell tower, which is on the edge of the property, is congested, a private cell means we can provide high priority LTE services to things like handhelds doing ticket sale or ticket check-ins and things like that. So we're taking a good hard look at that as a technology. And today we're going to talk about another use of AI that ought to come closer to home. Ought to be fun.
Definitely. Definitely don't. Well, speaking of today, we have lots to talk about, so we should definitely jump in. Now, the story behind the recent Ubiquiti breach reads like a bad hacker film script, but it brings out some pretty interesting trends that we're seeing from cybercrime. We're going to discuss some of them. Plus, we also have a great guest on the show, someone who might put the mojo back into infrastructure operations tooling. We have Mike Wagner, co-founder and CEO of Medify, on the show today. And as a bonus, we might actually get to talk about Major League Baseball and how have Kubernetes powered analytics. Some cool stuff to talk about, so definitely stick around. But first, like we always do, ton of stuff happening in the enterprise. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Google I.O. is serving up some spicy AI news. VentureBeat.com has given us the lowdown. Google has unleashed its Palm 2 language model, among other things that are coming out here. Google is amping up its TensorFlow ecosystem with open source ML updates. They've got DT Tensor technology for turbocharged model training and scaling. No more sluggishness from your fancy data sets out there. Plus, they also talked about the TensorFlow quantization API preview release. It's all about making models efficient and saving you some sweet development cash. Now, who doesn't love budget-friendly AI, right? Well, today, they also have to talk about Keras, the Python deep learning suite, which is a getting makeover. They've added Keras CV for computer vision and Keras NLP for natural language processing. Now, according to Alex Spinelli, Google's ML guru, they want to spread the love and empower all developers, no matter where they're coming from. And they're not just building AI for themselves, but they're creating a rising tide that lifts all ships up. Spinelli swears by TensorFlow, it's their ML workhorse. And with the DT Tensor upgrades, they're injecting more horsepower to keep up with the growing ML demands. Now, ML is a hungry beast. It always is craving more data, more power, more infrastructure. So that's where new Keras updates bring extra muscle there. You can now create your own mind-blowing computer vision and language wizardry that's going on there. Plus, JAX 2TF has also debuted, making JAX models easily usable with TensorFlow. It's like speaking two different AI languages and having a handy translator available to you. Now, you may have also remembered PyTorch, TensorFlow's cheeky rival. Well, Google loves options and supports developer choice, of course, but they're confident that TensorFlow is the ultimate power horse for large-scale, high-performance systems. This year, Google I.O. was amped up to become a playground for AI goodness. We know why, obviously, but some competitors going on there. They're dishing out powerful language models, ML tools, updates that make your head spin there. Google definitely wants you to dive in, create AI magic, and conquer the world.
Well, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, is aiming to help U.S. small businesses, election offices, local government agencies, hospitals, and K-12 school systems, organizations CISA describes as cyber poor, to shore up their cyber defenses and respond more quickly to attacks. According to an article at Dark Reading, word of this small organization concentration came straight from CISA Director Jen Easterly in remarks on May 10th at the 6th annual Hack the Capitol event in McLean, Virginia. The news doesn't mean that CISA is going to ignore the large organizations that have been its traditional focus, but it does mean that CISA recognizes that there are considerable differences in the needs and means of large and small organizations. The focus on smaller organizations acknowledges that often small to medium businesses, local government agencies, and schools have been overlooked and not included in the push to create more resilient organizations. Now, this overlooking has been especially damaging as malware publishers and ransomware criminals turn their attention to the smaller organizations less likely to be able to afford advanced defenses, analytics, and resilience products and services. In addition, smaller organizations are where the action is going to be. After all, 99% of all businesses in the U.S. have 250 employees or fewer, according to U.S. Census data. Now, one way in which the attention to small businesses is being seen is through the development of best practices. While the cybersecurity framework published by NIST is considered the gold standard for creating a cybersecurity plan for a business, that document is hard to understand and implementation is difficult, Easterly said, and I will echo that. CISA has thus introduced cybersecurity performance goals, or CPGs, which aim to be lower cost and lower effort goals that organizations can take to improve the cybersecurity posture. These are, by the way, goals that are based on the NIST framework, but these break it down into simpler, easier to swallow chunks. Still, understanding whether these initiatives meet their goals is going to be challenging. Why? Well, Easterly said it this way. The big question is, how do you actually measure reduction of risk, which is hard because we don't understand the universe of how many events there are. It's all anecdotal. Whatever numbers are out there, whatever studies are out there, whatever vendor, it's all really just a guess.
So thank you to the folks at PC Mag, Oliver, for this story. This is actually kind of fun. We've been talking all about AI, and I'm sure you folks are getting tired of this, but here's something just a little different. Wendy's drive-through orders are going to be taken by chatbot. So customers using Wendy's drive-thru service won't be talking to a human employee for much longer. From this coming June, a chatbot is set to take over. As the Wall Street Journal article says, Wendy's opted to use Google's natural language software to train an AI capable of taking food orders. Wendy's chief executive, Todd Penegor, says the chatbot is so good, quote, you won't know you're talking to anyone but an employee, unquote. Well, Wendy's had to work closely with Google to fine-tune its large language model to cope with the vast array of ways in which customers order food at the drive-thru. The customizations required include, quote, unique terms, phrases, and acronyms. That way, any combination of food items can be handled, but so can common terms such as biggie bags or someone just asking for a JBC. Thomas Kurian, CEO of Google Cloud, admits a drive-thru AI is actually, quote, a very complicated technical problem. However, Wendy's chatbot is expected to be very accomplished and can even handle a customer changing their mind halfway through ordering. On top of that, it will promote daily specials and attempt to upsell customers in a bid to increase the size and range of food items ordered. Well, as much as we hate those voice menus on calls, I'm wondering whether this will work or backfire. We can, of course, remember that large language models do need training, and one must wonder what kind of training went into the Wendy bot. I would challenge them to see if this is going to work in some place like, say, Scotland or Hawaii, because, boy, Pidgin English is going to be really tough, and I seriously doubt that went into their large language model.
Heard of real-world evidence data platforms? Well, if you have, you know, Aideon, who is leading the pack. They're like data wizards providing transparent, scientifically validated answers on medical treatments and technology. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this tech is I personally relate to Aideon's mission, which is to help healthcare decision makers make informed choices. That they've been armed with their Aideon evidence platform with the latest scientific advancements for a while. They also model themselves as superheroes of healthcare analytics, fighting the villains of uncertainty and guiding decisions with a lot of confidence using lots of data. Now, hot off the press this week from PR News, Aideon has dropped some interesting news around a new product called Aideon Discover. I think of it as a GPS for scientists and analysts in the biopharmaceutical and medtech realm. It helps them explore data, generate hypotheses, and uncover insights faster than you can say abracadabra. Now, what doesn't it do? Who wouldn't wish for their own genie in a bottle, right? To basically grant their wishes on data. Well, with Aideon Discover, finding and analyzing the right data sets seem to become a walk in the park. No more getting lost in the labyrinth of files or scratching your head in confusion. You could define populations, ask burning questions, get results quicker, and even quicker than Usain Bolt sprints to the finish line. And it's dream come true for that expansion of mind-blowing hypothesis generation that's out there today. Now, as I dug into the news more, I found some pretty interesting stuff about Aideon Discover. Here's some of the things. They have a lot of bells and whistles. In fact, they have customizable templates that create faster cohorts. In fact, they have it's audible. So that means you can actually iterate like a champ. You can find transparency and consistency in there. And it plays nice with the different data sets and models and the other Aideon applications that are out there to give you more flexibility. And something that's really making it compelling is that it's a complex tool, but it's also very user-friendly as your favorite social media app that's out there. Now, Dr. Jeremy Rassen, the president, co-founder, and chief technology officer at Aideon, he's over the moon, obviously, around unleashing this new tech to the world. he's heard the cries of the data enthusiasts that are out there. They're craving everyday insights with usability, and he wants Discover to actually deliver on that. And in fact, Discover seamlessly integrates with Adion's Substantiate application for when you need to actually scale up and take it up a notch with your data analysis. Now, we need more and more companies out there that take on complex issues like healthcare and pharmaceuticals, ones that can really bring data to the table and create the evidence for our future health. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the News Bites. But before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Thinks Canary. Now, everyone knows honeypots are a great idea. So why don't all internal networks run them? Right? Good question, right? Simple, because with all of our network problems, nobody needs one more machine to administer and worry about. We know the benefits that honeypots can bring, but the cost and effort of deployment always drops honeypots to the bottom of list things to do. Well, Thinks Canary changes this. Canaries can be deployed in minutes, even on complex networks, giving you all the benefits without the admin downsides. The Canary triggers are simple. If someone is accessing your LUR files or brute forcing your fake internal SSH server, you have a problem, right? Well, Canary uses deceptively uncomplicated high quality markers of trouble on your network. And here's how it works. Simply choose a profile for the Canary device, such as a Windows box, brand name router, or Linux server. If you want, you can further tweak the services your Canary runs. You may even need a specific IIS version, open SSH, or Windows file share with actual files constructed accordingly to your naming scheme. And lastly, register your Canary with the hosted console for monitoring and notifications. Then you just lie in wait. Attackers who have breached your network, malicious insiders, or other adversaries make themselves known by accessing your Canary tripwire, right? There's a little room for doubt. If someone browsed a file share and opened a sensitive looking document on your Canary, you immediately be alerted to the problem. View testimonials at canary.tools/love and see why customers on all seven continents love their Thinks Canaries. Deploy your birds and forget about them. They remain silent until needed. Get one alert via email, text, Slack, webhook, or syslog only when it matters. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get 5 Canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade support, and maintenance. And if you use code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. Thinks Canary adds incomparable value, but if you're unhappy, you can always return your Canaries with their 2-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. However, during all the years TWIT has partnered with Thinks Canary, the refund guarantee has never needed to be claimed. Visit canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And we thank Thinks Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, this first bite has a pretty interesting story because it reads like a hacker film script. Now, Nicholas Sharp, former Ubiquity engineer, he got into some serious trouble. He swiped a whole bunch of confidential data out there. He demanded a whopping $1.9 million in ransom from his employer. When they refused, he decided to make the stolen data public. Really not the brightest move, he asked me. Sharp tried to play it cool, and during his trial, he said that the cyber attack was just a security drill gone wrong. He claimed that he wanted to make Ubiquity safer for everyone, but the judge wasn't buying it, right? She told him he had no right to play God and handed down a sentence of 6 years in prison. Big whopping 6 years. That's pretty crazy. Now, the prosecutor, Damian Williams, wasn't pulling any punches either. He called Sharp an inveterate liar and data thief who was out for money and glory. Williams argued that a lighter sentence would be more of a mere slap on the wrist, so he pushed for 8 to 10 years. Ugh. Sharp got off with a little easier with 6, but Williams still considered it serious penalty for callous crimes. Before I bring the others back in, let's talk about how Sharp got caught, because this is a good one. You may or may not think he made a rookie mistake, but let us know in the comments. Well, copying all the data, while copying the data from Ubiquity Networks, his VPN had a little hiccup and he went offline. And when it came back up, Ubiquity caught his home IP address. Not so sharp for Mr. Sharp. But the fun doesn't stop there. Sharp kept digging in his own grave. He kept accessing the stolen data, trying to cover his tracks by deleting evidence and making it look like other employees were to blame. Now, eventually his colleagues caught on and they hit him with a ransom email. He hit them with a ransom email. And even though Ubiquity had been taking the bait, they called the FBI instead. So Sharp thought it was clever by posing as a whistleblower, spreading false stories about Ubiquiti's responses to cyber attack. But little did he know, the FBI, they had his number. Now, in the end, Sharp actions cost Ubiquiti a ton of money. In fact, they spent over $1.5 million and countless hours trying to fix their problem, the mess he made. And he planted those false reports. Their stock prices tanked. It cost them almost $4 billion in market value. Talk about a costly mistake. Now, Nicholas Sharp thought he could outsmart everyone and get away with his crimes, but he got caught and now faces in the slammer a long-term sentence here. Lesson learned, crime doesn't pay, especially when you aren't as sharp as you think. Now, I want to talk to my co-host here because this is a good one. This is a good topic that we should talk about. People trying to be hackers and cybercrime, trying to make money. What do you think of this guy? Like, you know, was he trying to pull the wool over everyone's eyes, or was he really trying to call out a problem? Cheaper, what do you think?
Criminal who's a rank amateur.
Yeah.
Well,
no question about that, because he violated every convention of being what we call in the industry an ethical hacker or a researcher. I mean, there are people who do try to find vulnerabilities, go in, do penetration testing and all that. But we should note that Ubiquiti has a bug bounty program. As an employee, it would be tough for him to be part of it, but if he had wanted to, he could try to sign up as a bug bounty member, and then he would be registered. They would know who he was. He would be saying from the get-go, I'm trying to help you with your security. That's not at all what happened, because let's, you know, point one. Ethical hackers don't ask for ransom. You know, let's start there. And you like I said, you can take it off from that point. But this is someone who I have to agree. He was trying to be a criminal, trying to be a super shark hacker person, and failed on just about every level.
Cheever, what do you think? Obviously, this guy needs some help.
I think what it is really is this guy is watching too many movies. You know, those, you know, hacker tropes that we see the Hollywood putting out, where the black hat goes and does something really egregious and then gets hired for really huge money afterwards. I'm sorry, the real world just doesn't work that way, or at least it doesn't anymore. My personal opinion is those agencies, and they shall remain unknown at the moment, that have hired hackers because they needed the talent. Okay, maybe you needed them at one time, but come on, we need to send the right message. It's kind of like Hollywood doing all these movies about people doing mass shootings, and it's for the greater good. I'm sorry, I'm comparing something really, really horrible to something just a little less horrible. But, you know, I've worked with a lot of white hats. In fact, our curmudgeon buddy, Oliver, has a very, very good friend that is a white hat that works for the Federal Reserve, for goodness sakes. There are white hats. They keep logs. They actually record their sessions so that it can be played back and examined ad nauseum by the teams that are trying to defend against such things. So anyway, I will say the story needs to be punctuated a little bit in that it has not gone to trial yet. I'm not a believer in trial by media, but having said that, the evidence seems very colossal against this person, and I'm sorry, they need to go and find out more what he did, because there's a good chance he did some things by accident that's going to increase the amount of damage, and certainly Ubiquiti's you know, their reputation has certainly been damaged. And I can very much imagine that once the criminal case is done, there's going to be a regular case, a civil case, and they're going to go and take them to the cleaners, because Ubiquiti definitely took a lot of damage to their reputation and lost sales. Now, having said that, I do like Ubiquiti. There's a lot of people that say, no, Ubiquiti's too simplistic. It can't do everything that a Cisco or, Enterprise. It's not Enterprise. I keep hearing that over and over and over again. I say, excuse me, but if I have to pay, $120,000 to $150,000 a year for an engineer, to do that last 10%, basically, or 20%, because it's kind of agreed that the Ubiquiti gear can do 80% of what the big boys can do. But the question is, do you really need it?
Right.
So that I'm going to say, Ubiquiti, you did the right thing. Thank you very much on behalf of the rest of the industry. And to the folks at the FBI, thank you very much. I still strongly recommend that people take a very, very hard look at joining the FBI InfraGuard program, INFRGARD. It's where you can, you gotta be willing to submit to a background check because they want to make sure they can trust you and you're not a criminal, but you can get information on what's happening in the world. That is normally considered government confidential. So it's a good way to keep ahead of the game. And I strongly recommend you take a good hard look at it. And, this is going to be a very, very interesting case to see what actually happens once it really does go to court. I don't think it's done yet. The civil's definitely not done. The criminal's, I think, is done, but the civil's not done. I think we're going to see something quite spectacular from the courts when the civil hits the court cases.
Kurt?
Yeah, I wanted to say one of the things that this did show is that there were obviously some products that are available but not being used by Ubiquiti. This is an issue that comes up frequently enough that there is a class of product. It's called DLP, or data loss prevention. That looks for this sort of unusual data transfer activity. An employee who doesn't normally transfer gigabytes worth of data suddenly doing so, and clamps down on it, as well as letting others in the organization know that it's going on. So it's obvious, strike that, it's apparent that Ubiquiti did not have this in place. But this is not the first time we've heard a story like this. It's unlikely it will be the last. And so it means that companies really should, if they have any critical organizational data, whether it belongs to them or belongs to their customers, should have both procedural and technological pieces in place to prevent its, here's another technical word, exfiltration, or stealing the data, and cut down on the possibility of data loss. I won't say it's a completely solved problem, but it's one where there are a lot of tools to help you, and it behooves any company to look at employing those if they don't already have them in place.
You must have read my mind, because the question isn't in the show notes, but I was going to actually ask you that question, which is, it seems weird to me that an insider could exfiltrate that much data without anybody knowing, and then be able to track it. So I think that you're right. Like, they definitely need to put more security measures in place. And this is a soundboard for the rest of the industry, no matter who you are, whether you're a hardware vendor or you're a service provider or whoever, making sure that you have services like DLP in place is definitely an important thing to think about. And it doesn't matter how big you are. You could be a small business or an enterprise business. Having this in place to really detect these things, even sometimes false positives, false negatives are better than nothing. So I think that, I definitely agree with you there, Kurt. I think they need to do something for sure. Well, folks, I would say that does it for that, because we have to move on to our guests. Lots more interesting stuff to talk about. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's ACI Learning. Thanks to ACI Learning, the days of boring archaic training methods are finally over. The lack of meaningful impact often shows up as low engagement, translating to suboptimal performance. You and your team deserves to be entertained while you're trained and be empowered to keep your organization safe and secure. It's simple. If your IT training isn't raising your team to the level you aspire to be, you need ACI Learning. And while training the industry's completion rate is barely 30%, ACA Learning blows its competitors out of the water with over 80% completion rate. This is the format the IT professionals really want. In today's IT talent shortage, whether you operate as your own department or a part of a larger team, your skills must be at a bare minimum up to date. 94% of CIOs and CISOs agree that attracting and retaining talent is increasingly critical to their roles. ACI Learning helps you retain your team and entrust them to thrive while they're investing in the security of your business. Keep your skills up to date with over 7,000 hours of content available and new episodes added daily. Your enterprise needs cohesive, cutting-edge training to keep your training and your team compliant and ahead of the pack. Choose an existing course. Let ACI Learning combine modules for a tailored solution, or let them custom design a course to address your specific needs. ACI Learning's private bootcamp will train your team alongside the most passionate and best subject matter experts certified in the latest version of each certification. Full access to advanced reporting via ACI Learning's Pro Portal. You can track and manage your team's results, manage seats. You can unassign and assign team members for customized courses relevant to their positions, and access monthly progress usage reports. Plus, visual reports provide immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period. ACI Learning trains thousands of aspiring tech and cyber professionals annually, including providing scholarships to individuals from diverse backgrounds and those transitioning out of a military service into civilian careers. Join the always-on tech training solution. In a rapidly changing world of technology, ACI Learning is in the studio daily to record and share relevant content that impacts your business. Be bold, train smart. Learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/twit. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at 5 seats. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit to learn about a free 2-week trial for training for your entire team. And we thank ACI Learning for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. And today we have Mike Wagner. He's co-founder and CEO of Medify. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Love the mic. It's so clear. It feels like you're with us, like in the studio. It's all amazing. Thank you for being here. Now, I'm really excited about the content today, but because we have people from all over the spectrum in their careers. Whether they're CTOs, CEOs, starting out as just, low-level IT people, to experts, they love to hear people's origin stories and journey through tech. Can you maybe take us through your journey through tech and what brought you to Medify?
Yeah. I'll just go back from the beginning. For me, it started out just with an interest. I mean, overall, I loved computers from a very young age, and I started coding when I was around 12, I guess. And from there, I started out with networking. And so to age myself brutally, I was a CNE, a certified Novell engineer. If you guys remember the good old days of network engineering with Novell. And IBM brought me in actually while I was still in college. So from there, I went all over the place with IBM. I ran a services region up in northern New England for a bit, and then went down to California and ran actually a sales and distribution region branch manager out of San Diego for several years before being convinced to join Red Hat. After joining Red Hat, I founded a little company called Medify. So really, it was just two companies. An intrinsic interest in technology from the very beginning, and kind of always having an eye for entrepreneurship. I was always looking for what would be a really cool business to start, based on where I see things moving in an enterprise direction. So, waiting for all of that to line up perfectly, that's when things started with Medify. I saw the pieces falling into place. And my co-founder and I, we both kind of looked at each other and said, this has to be a startup. So that's how I got here.
Fantastic. Great story. Great story. So I, lots of stories and topics to talk about today. I talked to a lot of organizations each and every day, and a lot of them run, a lot of organizations, whether enterprise or startups, run it on a bunch of these problems. But before we get into that, Medify, it's pretty unique, unique name for a company. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah. So it's based on a portmanteau. So it's a portmanteau of metal and simplified. Right. So you get to combine the two, use a really cool word called portmanteau, which didn't even know what that word meant. It's a combination of those two words to create the Medify, which, you know, we realized going through some of the trials and tribulations that Ian Evans, my CTO, and I did at our prior companies, that this need for low level simplicity was just rampant. You know, right. there's all of the sort of attention and investment had gone upstack to the fun world of Kubernetes and Docker and, you know, application stacks. And while all that was happening, everybody was still working on the bare metal on the servers themselves with command line and tools that are 15, 16 years old. So yeah, right. That's where it came from.
Now, you know, I talked to a lot of organizations and they, you know, when they want to start out, especially startups, they like to use, you know, cloud service providers, managed services like S3 or ETLs or any runtimes or services that are out there. But before long, you know, they obviously sometimes move to private clouds or they use their own virtualization. Mm-hmm. But before long, they outgrow all this stuff. They want to scale. They want to really see that cost to scale trend. And these kind of managed places don't work always, or even just the hybrid world doesn't work for them. In fact, I talked to Splunk a while ago about how they moved to their own infrastructure before that. So my first question here is, what do you see from a challenging perspective for organizations when they try to scale out their own infrastructure or architecture, especially in the hybrid architecture case?
Yeah. So from a scale out perspective, when companies first take on, you know, like a true cloud migration, you know, and this is the move was, let's get everything in the cloud as quickly as possible, right? That right. by itself is a difficult move, right? And a lot of times it's just a lift and shift, and then you get the monthly bills associated with that. And all of a sudden it looks like, well, what we did to try and save money may end up costing us money. So there's a number of challenges with the initial migration to the cloud. And then once you see the bill, there's a movement around cloud repatriation and, you know, deciding at what point do you make a break even where it's like, okay, we know we're paying more than we should on a monthly basis for the compute that we're getting out of the cloud. Not to mention this beautiful new term, IT sprawl. Started occurring, right? Where, or shadow IT started happening, where it was so easy to flip on instances in EC2 or Google that, you know, things got a little out of control. And with those out of control and unseen virtual machines running, all of a sudden, you know, you're left with much more, there's more exposure surfaces. There's suddenly bigger bills than you expected, and OpEx. Monthly operating expenditures all of a sudden, you know, went through the roof with a lot of companies. So hence the move towards cloud repatriation. And that's also driven by, there's a number of factors from a technology perspective that are really driving the need to move on to bare metal and also bring these workloads back. Not to mention, you know, Moore's Law, as a really powerful influencer here, because things, compute has gotten so condensed. And what you can do in a single chassis now, you know, equals what it took a couple rows and racks of servers to do in the past.
Right.
So that cost and what it costs to actually manage and maintain and do all the things that you need to do with the servers that you may need to be just good enough, you know, from a product perspective and from an overall infrastructure and ops perspective, has come way down. And so... Right. We wanted to make it so that, and take it to the next level with that, essentially provide a public cloud-like experience, make it just as easy as it is for you to flip on AMIs in AWS and do that on-prem or wherever your prem is, so to speak, right? Edge, private cloud, all of those areas. I mean, and that's the other funny thing about data center, right? What do you even call, I mean, what classifies as a data center at this point? You know, is a wiring closet with more horsepower than a data center had 5 years ago? You know, does that count? I think it should, right? You know, and given the growth of edge, that's where things are really getting interesting for us, because there's just so much happening on the edge in the hybrid space, and overall with the use case, with this sort of ever connected populace that we now get to try and service.
Now, you mentioned bare metal, and I want to get into that a little bit more, because obviously I see, I've worked with some organizations where they are, you know, they're instrumenting their infrastructure and their code to, they notice, hey, there's a lot of latency in the pipeline here. Mm-hmm. And whether I'm spinning up a virtual machine or I'm trying to proactively create virtual machines, so I remove that cold boot scenario or whatnot and what forth. And they find that potentially moving to bare metal can reduce that latency and actually improve their performance a lot. However, they're afraid to do it. What's some of the things, what maybe misconceptions and some of the challenges they see there?
Well, they're probably not misconceptions. They're probably, you know, bang on. When it comes to bare metal, taking it on by yourself, it's not easy. And one of our charts always talks about how, you know, hardware is hard, bare metal is harder. You know, it's just one of those things that there's no getting around the fact that working with machines directly, working with the servers directly, it requires a fair amount of tribal knowledge. Depending on whose hardware you're putting it on, it requires a lot of in-depth knowledge in the proprietary tools that are required to make it happen. And each one, so that's the other area here that it really only became possible to do what we're doing in the last 5-6 years because of the growth and acceptance of open standards at low levels. So in particular, shout out to the guys at the DMTF and the Redfish specification, as well as the OpenBMC specification. Those two, and Redfish in particular, has become ubiquitous among all the manufacturers. And that provides this low-level API, this low-level specification that has a massive community, an open standards community, open source community around it, that's really driving the R&D. So that makes our life incredibly, incredibly simple. And with those drivers, we're able to make this tool that makes taking all of that and putting it into a really nice UI, and then adding a bunch of cool methods and lessons learned from the trials and tribulations of building data centers all around the globe. And we kind of boiled that down, distilled it into our sort of dream infrastructure and operations tool. And that's what Mojo Platform is. I mean, you know, the fear is real. It's based in experience. Sure. And we had a call today with a gentleman who he was just at his wit's end. Okay. So, you know, he's been running, and he was only putting together about 50 or 60 servers, but still, I mean, 50 or 60 servers for, a team of 2-3 guys. So it's a lot of work. And when you have to build them all from scratch, and then you're also trying to manually maintain those servers, it's just not easy. So yeah, we make it really, really easy to discover, provision, validate, and then maintain those servers in a lights out fashion. So as long as there's a plug and a network cable going into that thing, we can work all our Mojo magic.
And what about the scenario where you want to bring your own infrastructure with you? Is there a scenario for that with Mojo and how it works out?
Absolutely. So that's really key to us. So we're kind of DIY for private clouds. Okay. So it is your infrastructure. It's always your infrastructure. We don't host, we work with hosters. Okay. But the key thing for our value prop really is the cost savings associated with getting to put it on your own metal. You write it off as CapEx. It's your gear. You know your gear well. It's your Upstack tools. So we also integrate really cleanly with all of the major configuration players like, you know, Ansible, Chef, Puppet, whoever, Terraform, as well as the container application platforms. So, OpenShift, of course, Rancher, Anthos, all of the usual suspects in the Kubernetes space. And we've partnered with all those companies as well. So it's a great experience and provides sort of the flexibility that our customers want in terms of using the automation and configuration tools of their choice. And then adding that beautiful functionality that's there with those products, and now also having the ability to add that to metal, to their bare metal, and manage the infrastructure pieces themselves. So it's kind of treating ops as a first-class citizen, right? Finally, you know, not making those guys just hammer everything out at the command line. And you know, with one guy goes a ton of tribal knowledge, right? So you're so dependent on that one person. That's the other aspect of Mojo Platform. It really acts as a knowledge management tool in many ways, because it simplifies the processes so much that it de-risks your future in terms of, okay, what do we do from a people perspective? If Bob goes down, we're in trouble, you know?
Bus factor. Yeah,
that's right. the bus factor is a beautiful thing. Absolutely. Horrible thing, but yeah,
it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to talk a little bit about one of your big partners, because there's some pretty good use cases in here from this particular partner. Maybe uncover this. I kind of alluded to it in the beginning of the show, talking about MLB, but I'm curious to see how they use it, what they're using it for, that kind of thing.
Yeah, MLB, awesome, awesome customer, ton of fun, really great guys. A fun backstory with those guys too. I mean, Major League Baseball, of course, they kind of started this whole big data thing around sports, created a subculture of, you know, the whole Moneyball thing. You know, not only were the fans getting into it, but the management people also. You know, essentially using the stats to drive who they bring on and when they use people and how they build their teams out. So working with them was really, really a treat. Their challenge was they wanted to move off of VMware. There's dollars associated with that. And then also they couldn't do the low level things that they wanted to do in a lights out manner. And they also were having some performance issues. So like you had mentioned, the performance uptick and low latency requirements of the applications that they were running on the edge. So all of their ballparks operate essentially as edge POPs. Each one has its own stack of servers that runs. And then they have some amazing technology that runs on top of that. The application stack is run through Anthos. So that's all GCP. So it's a true hybrid solution. Google was our partner on this particular, with Major League Baseball on this. What they're able to do and what they wanted to do to take it from cloud-based, or I should say virtualization-based, into bare metal, up the performance across the board on all their applications, made their Hawkeye system work better, which is the, you know, pitch tracking and ball rotation. They track everything on the field. And then also really gave them the ability to manage remotely in ways that they couldn't do before. So there's a bunch of money saved on the just travel and living expenses of having to go out. And Kevin Backman is their senior architect who really ran the project. And he talked about how they would call it hand jamming. So it removed the hand jam aspect of having to fly out to the stadium, grab a thumb drive, and do the necessary, you know, firmware upgrades or BIOS upgrades or whatever had to be done in a lights out fashion. So yeah, just it was a really cool use case. It kind of combined all the cool aspects of what we knew, what we essentially built Mojo Platform to do. With a customer like MLB, it was just a lot of fun to work with. Very advanced technical team also, from a networking and compute perspective, they just are really advanced. In fact, MLB, given where they were in the marketplace as a leader in this big data push to integrate sort of the digital experience with the fan experience overall, they had actually acquired their own consulting house. So they had been using these guys outside, and then you just said, okay, we're just going to buy your company because we're spending so much with you guys. So yeah, it was a really, really fun.
Nice to be able to do that.
Yeah. Right. Well, when you have deep pockets, anything is possible.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, no. And we have a great relationship with those guys. We're on our third year with them. We expanded now into the minor league parks. Lots of really cool new use cases coming up that we look forward to getting rolling with them as well.
Right. Gbert.
Hey, so I was one of the first 10 Novell instructors in the world, so that goes way back. I actually helped write part of the reseller authorization course.
Wow.
Anyway, be that as it may, back in those days, it wasn't hand jamming, it was floppy pitching, because we were using Norton Ghost to use multicast in Image Labs.
Yeah.
Well, hand jamming, there's two things that still today are almost all hand jamming. One is point of sale. The other one is Beowulf clusters.
Wow.
So coming from the University of Hawaii, we actually ran a lot of clusters. And the problem is there was only one person, well, two people in our college that actually knew how to build clusters from scratch.
Mm.
And boy, this sure sounds like it might be a fit, but is it?
It is. Yeah. So in fact, so as an example, I mean, we spin up OpenShift clusters, you know, completely push button, right? And that's the hardware itself, you know, the initial discovery and provisioning of the OS, core OS. And then we have a service catalog where you can service chain after that the runtimes of choice. So it could be, you know, an OpenShift cluster. It could be an Anthos cluster. It could be a Rancher cluster, whatever you want. Yep, we service chain that right through our dashboard and through our service catalog. And then, you know, with that, you have sort of instant views into what metal is running what, and the health of those systems as well. So, and that's a big piece of this, frankly. You know, when it comes to data that has locality requirements, you know, for HIPAA and other financial reasons, there's compliance and governance audits that have to be run regularly on, okay, what rev levels are these systems at, both from a hardware and software perspective. So we help out with all of those fronts. And yeah, Beowulf, man, I have not heard about Beowulf in a long time. So that's right back there with Novell. I mean, that's very interesting, but we haven't spun up any Beowulf clusters. I don't know if there's any going out there, but you know, we've had fun with all kinds of different use cases, and especially on the edge, you know, the profile of what we call, you know, and what you can fit a cluster on is amazing. And so that's where things are getting really interesting and really fun for us. And then wireless stuff too. We have we're doing a lot of fun things for an ISP out of Virginia that includes some broadband wireless with another set of technologies that we have called Photon, which is a different beast completely, but it meshes in and integrates really well with our solution overall. So it's a lot of fun.
So what about point of sale? Because that's another big one.
Yeah. So point of sale, we have use cases, but we have not actually implemented with a large point of sale customer yet. So we know we can do it and we look forward to it, but it's not, we do not have a retail customer like that. We, you know, like a Walmart or, you know, a Best Buy or anything like that under our belt yet. So if they're listening, we're happy to help them out. And, you know, if they're still sending teams around to hand jam their systems, we can make that a wholly remote process for them.
Yeah. It's going to be the small guys, you know, maybe the foreign, like the, you know, I used to work for Fujitsu, and their point of sale system was totally hand jammed in the beginning. And they have to deal with so many different languages. So that ought to be an interesting fit. The big guys like NCR and IBM and so forth, they're going to have their own solution. But anyway, lots of interesting stuff. But, you know, it looks like Kurt has got some interesting questions too. So let's toss it to Kurt next.
All right.
I appreciate it. Well, here's one of my questions. You know, we've been talking about hybrid cloud and cloud to bare metal and that whole evolution. When cloud services first started gaining traction, one of the great arguments in their favor was that they could level the playing field, basically allow smaller organizations to have access to the same sort of resources that had always been reserved for large enterprises.
Yeah.
So looking at what you're providing now, is what you're doing a large enterprise tool only, or do you have smaller organizations that are figuring out how to take advantage of what you're offering?
Yeah, no, great question. We absolutely have small customers, mid-sized customers, and then hyper and very large customers. So, you know, for the large customers, there's an obvious break-even point. There's a point of no return, if you will, where you know your cloud costs have just spun out of control. For smaller customers, it's time savings, and it's the softer costs associated with having to spend way too many hours doing the simple things, or not so simple things, as it relates to managing your own servers. So it's that fear factor part that keeps us overall utility, right? You know, what value is to a customer is really dependent on what their use cases are and you know where they're struggling. Our tools, since it is so low level, helps out small shops anywhere from 5 servers up to 60 servers, we'll call them small. And then, you know, it jumps in sort of that middle class, which would be from sort of 60 to say 150, and then 150 to 1,000, and anything 1,000 and over, I think, is a pretty decent sized shop. We've got customers across the board. They love the tool just as much if they have 20 servers to work with, or if they have, 2,000. So.
Very good. Well, when we're talking about the size of the installation, it relates to another thing that a lot of people have issues with, and that's the size of their staff.
Yeah.
And not only the size, but the specific expertise of their staff. And this is, again, another way in which classic cloud was supposed to offer an advantage. You know, you could have people who, for example, only had to worry about the logic flow of a process rather than having to know all about maintaining a server. How does your offering play into that skills and FTE deficit that so many organizations are struggling with these days?
Yeah, no, that's a big one for us. So that's one of our core value propositions, is that, and that is the toughest thing. Everybody got very drunk on virtualization and cloud for good reason. It was super easy. I mean, there's no reason not to, but then all of a sudden you have these use cases and developers and applications asking for bare metal. And a lot of shops are saying, okay, whoa, let's take a look at our guys. Can we handle this? How many can we handle? If we do venture into these waters of providing bare metal behind our own firewall. And so the whole idea behind our tool was to alleviate the concerns around FTEs, by having this keep it stupid simple, idea behind it all. Right. And Ian Evans, our CTO and co-founder, he had this idea many years ago, wrote a thesis about it, and, had to work with the larger tools that were largely kludged together from multiple acquisitions by the big players, by the big OEMs. And then also even the open source stuff was just brutal to have to try and work with. So to make it easy on one guy to manage multiple server brands, be on-prem behind your firewall, that was our sort of golden use case, if you will. We're like, okay, we want to make this easy for a small business, for a single guy to manage 100 servers or better by himself, and have a tool that makes that incredibly simple. And that's where we took it, and we feel like we had success with it. Speaking of, it's kind of funny because we actually won an award from Data Center World, and one of the judges was from Omdia. I think it was Moises Levy, who was one of the judges, and we won. So for most likely best new technology, most likely to gain additional funding. And this was back in 2021. We already had MLB as a customer at that point, but we got to show off our software, and they liked it. And so it was a really cool thing. And now we actually did get funding, and haven't announced that publicly yet, but here we are. It's very exciting, and we are looking forward to assisting small businesses as well as the very large guys with this, because from a cost perspective, we're much less than anything similar.
Before we close up, just to kind of go back to the bare metal question, mm-hmm. I know that, obviously follow cloud services, like you said, people are drunk on virtualization in the cloud. And of course, Amazon comes along with their Amazon EKS Anywhere on bare metal. Can you maybe just give us a comparison why anybody would use that compared to going to the solution that you would have, that you guys have?
Yeah. So Amazon EKS on bare metal, is that their on-prem, or is that their, no, that's okay.
It can be their on-prem. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so I guess I haven't seen too much of it out there. They had another one called Outpost or something like that mm-hmm. that also just didn't do much. For us, it's simplicity, bottom line, right? We just wanted to make this a very simple tool to use, easy to download, or we can drop it in as an appliance or even a palm top, if you will. I mean, we can put it on a lot of different form factors, but simplicity really led the day for us. And then ubiquity and no concern about any lock-in. You know, we don't have any proprietary tools. We don't have any concerns about back-end APIs that will only work in AWS or in GCP. It's all just about, you know, DIY and use the tools you want. And we're just here to handle the metal at a low level and make your life really easy when it comes to servers and provisioning and all those fun things.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for being here. Unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. Lots of great stuff going on here. I want to just give you maybe a little bit of time to give your pitch, maybe tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Medify, maybe how their organization could get started.
Yeah, I would say get started small. You know, just start with a few servers, try Mojo platform out. And the easiest way to get it and to get in contact with us is just to hit our website and click the contact us or get a demo button. And we'll be happy to show you how it works and get it into your environment so you can start realizing all the benefits of, you know, being able to DIY your own metal in minutes.
Thanks again. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another other best thing enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twiet. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my amazing co-host, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Thank you, Curtis, for being here. You know, we've heard about your upcoming events. Maybe you could tell the folks at home where they can see your work, maybe how they can get in touch with you.
Certainly, they can find my work. They can find all of my large work, on omnia.com. Although I will be honest that, to see much of it, you have to subscribe. Smaller pieces and, things of perhaps more general interest will show up on Dark Reading, on the Omnia tab, as well as some that I try to put on LinkedIn and, platforms like that. Now, if they want to see pointers to all that, people are welcome to follow me on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. And I'm also spreading my wings a little bit over on Mastodon, where I am, oddly enough, KG4GWA at mastodon.sdf.org. So please feel free to follow me any of those places, as well as following me on LinkedIn. I'm Curtis Franklin on LinkedIn. And I accept direct messages on all of those platforms. So let me know what you're thinking about. And let me know if you're going to be at Black Hat or DEF CON. I'm going to be at both. Would love to have a chance to meet up with any of the members of the Twiet Riot in real space.
Thanks, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Brian Cheever. Thanks again for being here. Great seeing you. Can tell the folks on what you're doing in the coming weeks, where they can touch with you.
I'm getting fiber in my diet. I'm actually rolling out lots of single mold fiber optics over at the Central Florida Fairgrounds. But interestingly enough, I have already registered for the Infocom show, which is in June at the Orlando's Convention Center. And Infocom is going to be interesting. Looking at all kinds of different things. So if there's going to be any of the Twiet Riot there, we'd love to also meet in real space. Even though the show's in June, I'm already getting deluged by, let's meet at our booth. Anyway, lots of fun. I'll be talking about a lot of different things. I still use Twitter. I'm still kind of a dinosaur on that. And I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. It's actually a leftover from my students hanging on me. In fact, Chibert is because my students and I had a Dilbert naming theme for all our servers. And Mike Cannata, who is now with the folks at Spirent and so forth. They're not called Spirent anymore. Anyway, he said, you need to be Cheebert. So that is also my email address, which is Cheebert, C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. You're also welcome to use Twit at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear your show ideas. I've got pretty thick skin, so if you don't like what we said, okay, insert whatever you want. We've got all kinds of conversations going on, and I am not afraid of using a machine translator. We've had questions from folks in France. I've had questions from folks in South Africa, definitely some Germans, and some Swedish. Lots of fun. We'd love to hear your questions, no matter what country you're in, because we have viewers on every single continent. I am still under the belief, I think that we have a download viewer at McMurdo Science Station in Antarctica, and that was the last continent we were looking for. Anyway, take care and be safe, everybody.
Thanks, Cheebert. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. Thank you very much. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch, listen, and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll go. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, guest information, of course, the links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, there, you'll next to those videos, there you go, you get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your applications, any one of your devices, because we're on all of those podcast applications out there. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Another way to support the show, that's right, Club Twit. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else, and it's only $7 a month. That's right. There's a lot of great things that come with Club Twit. One of them is the exclusive access to the members-only Discord server, which I'm on right now. Lots of fun discussions and channels in there. You can chat with hosts and producers, separate channels. There's special events on there, so definitely check that out. Join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Club Twit also offers corporate group plans as well. It's a great way to give access to your entire team, whether it's our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members, just 5, at a discounted rate of $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you like there. It's really a great way for your sales team, your IT team, your developers, your tech teams to stay up to date and access to all of our podcasts. Plus, just like the regular membership, you get access to the Twit Discord server and the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. Plus, get this, your family can also join the fun as well. Family plans. That's right. $12 a month. You get 2 seats with that and $6 for each additional seat. And they get all the advantages of the single plan as well. So you get lots of options there. Jeff, definitely join Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends or family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twyatt. That's right. We talk about a lot of fun tech topics on the show. So definitely share it with them because I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. And after they subscribe, or maybe after you subscribed, you can join us live. We do the show live 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Friday. We're doing it right now. You can see the streams at live.twit.tv. You can come see how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the banter before and after the show. Lots of fun stuff that we talk about. But, you know, if you're going to watch the show live, you got to join the infamous IRC channel as well. You can go to irc.twit.tv and jump into Twit Live channel there. We love the chat room. We have lots of great discussions, a lot of amazing characters in the show and in the channel there. And they give us a ton of great titles after each show. I laugh each and every week. So thank you guys for supporting the show there. Definitely hit me up. I want you to hit me up and contact me, whether it's twitter.com/LouMM. There I post out all my enterprise tidbits. I have lots of direct message conversations with people, career, tech discussions, whatever. In fact, I just helped somebody recently on some stuff there. In fact, you can also hit me up on Mastodon at LouMM at twit.social. Of course, direct message me there. I don't post too much there yet. I'm getting used to it a little bit still, but I'm going to start doing that more stuff. So you can hit me up there. Plus, you know, obviously, Louis Maresca on LinkedIn. I have lots of great conversations on there each and every week. I love connecting with people. So please hit me up there. I appreciate that. If you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, please check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the great ways for you to customize your office experience, make it more productive for you. And if you have Excel in your Microsoft 365 service or subscription, check out the Automate tab. inside of Excel. That is where that's my bread and butter. That's where I live. It's called Office Scripts. It's the latest and greatest ways for you to record macros, generate no code solution for you to automate some stuff using Power Automate. Lots of great ways for you to customize that. So definitely check that out and play with that. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Obviously, I thank my co-hosts, but I also want to thank Leo and Lisa. They continue to support us each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. I want to thank Mr. Brian Chi just one more time, because he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support. We couldn't do the show without you. Thank you to all the staff and engineers at Twit, because again, couldn't do the show without them. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor for today, because they make us look good after the fact. They cut out all my mistakes and my fouls with the words. So thank you. Thank you, editor, for helping us out there, helping me out. Plus also thank you to our technical director today. He's the famous and fabulous and amazing tech guy, Mr. Ant Pruitt. He's not only a great guy, but he also does a great show. It's called Hands-On Photography, and they do some amazing stuff. I learned stuff each and every week from this show. And what's going on this week in the show?
I'm not sure about famous, more like infamous, Ant Pruitt. I appreciate the support, my man. This week on the show, Hands On Photography, I had the honor and pleasure of finally being able to sit down and chat with Mr. Terry White. He is the worldwide evangelist at Adobe for Photoshop and Lightroom. And it's a lot of fun being able to pick his brain to talk about NAS and storage, because you have a big old fancy camera and you take all of these high megapixel images, and I know you're running out of space on that computer. So he's got some options to walk you through storing all of your beautiful photos, Lou.
Love it. Love it. Thanks, Sam. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of home theater geekitude.